Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And off we go. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, the Thursday morning edition of the Rob Brown Show starts now. Welcome in, good people of upstate South Carolina. Hello, America. What's up, world? Great to be with you. Happy Thursday. One day closer to another, I hope, rousing college and professional football weekend across these great United States. I am Rob Brown, the great one Lonzo, on the other side of the metaphorical glass this AM. And what a day we have lined up. What a show, I hope, we have lined up. We'll find out over the next 4 hours of electrifying entertainment because we've got all of the things to talk about this AM. My friends, we have got quite a bit of football as we will continue to look ahead to a pair of massive college football games for South Carolina and Clemson this weekend. The Carolina Panthers down in Miami, FLA, to take on the Dolphins in what feels like a tone-dictating game for the Carolina Panthers. This game feels like a game that will determine what the attitude of the franchise is moving forward. This game feels like if Carolina comes out and they look like they are unprepared and they look like the game plan is poor and they look like they are not executing well and they look like they have no leadership, then it feels to me like this might be the game where a lot of folks who have defended Dave Canales, Bryce Young, etc., Dan Morgan, perhaps, etc., maybe start to feel like that attitude shifts a little bit. And I would like to talk about that later on in the show. We talked yesterday about the concept of the get-right game. Carolina took advantage of theirs against Kentucky. They had to because they are now about to start the meat and potatoes of the SEC schedule, and it is not getting easier, at least not for a month or so. So we'll get to that. Clemson, get-right game against North Carolina. Fortunately for them, two of them in a row with Boston College. We talked about how this needs to be a step-by-step set for the Clemson Tigers. Go get everything right against North Carolina, then turn around, drop the bomb on BC, baby, and then get your head right for SMU coming to the crib. We'll talk about that. Before I get to any of that, I do want to get to this very briefly. Brian Snicker and the Atlanta Braves announced that he would not be returning to the manager's office next year for the Atlanta Braves. Which, obviously, if you have listened to this show, I, as a distressed Atlanta Braves fan this year, have given Brian Snicker hell over the course of this season. And I do not think that I was unfair when I did it. I don't think that I crossed any lines. I don't think that I went too far. I don't think that I said anything that was over the top for what he did. I don't think that anything I said was inappropriate. I don't think that I was rude. I don't think that I went too far. I think at the end of the day, Brian Snicker, throughout the course of this season, had a lot of managerial mistakes. And yes, there are other variables and factors that impacted what happened to a Atlanta Braves team that the expectations were very high for. The injuries were tragic. I don't know that anybody could have known that Jurickson Profar, after you handed him a big three-year contract, was going to get popped for PEDs and miss half of the season. There's a lot of variables that went into what happened for the Braves this year that are outside of the control of Brian Snicker. But there were also a lot of variables within the control of Brian Snicker. So I think my criticism throughout the course of the year was fair. I don't think it crossed any lines. But I do want to say this. It is, I think, for me, the definition of the phrase bittersweet. I do. Because Brian Snicker, and first and foremost, will be transitioning into an advisory role for the Braves. He'll work in the front office. He'll give his thoughts. Brian Snicker represents something that isn't really a thing in professional sports anymore. That is loyalty and longevity. Brian Snicker was in the Atlanta Braves organization for 49 years. Next year will be the 50th year where Brian Snicker is in the Braves organization. Brian Snicker, if you have followed his story over the years, was a guy who was asked to be a low-level minor league manager for a hell of a lot longer than most people are A, asked to, and B, can, right? Like, if you are not good enough to get promoted from that level at some point, not that Snit wasn't, but if you're not the type of guy who is rising up through the ranks, at some point, an organization paying you to succeed, to thrive, will promote you. And Snit, though he did get promoted over the years, Snit kind of took a long time before he got his call up to the bigs. And when he got up to the bigs, he made the most of it. Brian Snicker had, all things considered, including a very disappointing year this year, Brian Snicker had a very successful run with the Atlanta Braves. It produced, obviously, the 2021 World Series. A World Series that I can say is one of my better sports memories as a fan. I grew up an Atlanta Braves fan. I got to see a World Series when I was a Ute. I got to see a World Series coming up. And to be honest, I never thought that I would see another one. And then 2021 happened, and it was absolutely incredible. I remember it because myself and a couple of buddies started watching that World Series together at different watering holes. And then eventually, when the Braves ended up taking an L against H-Town and got themselves in a hole, we all collectively had, at the end of the last loss to Houston, we were all sitting around a table at Hall of Fame Sports Grill, as a matter of fact. We were all sitting around the table having a conversation. And the conversation, basically after the L, as a method of coping with the trauma, I am sure, the conversation turned into, boys, we cannot meet up for the next game. We took an L. That means these seats are cursed. That means us being together for these games are cursed. We all have to watch the next game at home.
Wait, and everyone agreed to that?
Everyone agreed to it. There were nine of us, and every one of us was like, that is exactly correct. And so the next game, the game the Braves won the World Series, the next game, every one of us was at home. I was living in an apartment on Wade Hampton Boulevard, just outside of downtown Greenville. It was a one-bedroom, one-bathroom, like maybe 900-square-foot apartment. And on a night...
With grandma's pictures.
With grandma's pictures. That is exactly correct. And on a night that should have been a sports fan's dream. That is a night that I should have been in the middle of downtown GVL. Yeah. That's a night I should have been crushing brewskis downtown and Ubering back to the crib to sleep for a night or two. Instead, I was on the couch in the apartment with a text thread with like 9 Braves fans on it going off. I still have a picture of me in front of my TV holding up a glass out of a bottle of whiskey. I always have one celebration bottle of whiskey on the bar. And when I have to open it, I go replace it with the next bottle of expensive whiskey that stays closed until it is time for the next celebration. The last time that I opened one was when I got married last year, over a year ago. I popped that one for the wedding weekend. I purchased another one. It is still unopened on the bar for whatever celebration is next, because you never know when it's going to be time for a high-level celebration. Popped one open that night in 2021. Crushed like half of it. Regretted it immensely the next day, but fortunately I didn't work until noon, so it didn't matter. But all of that being said, that night was incredible. There's a picture in front of me, in front of the television with behind it the, it's not like the official team photo, but it was a still from the video of the Braves celebrating with the trophy with Brian Snicker and Freddie Freeman and the boy, Ronnie, and the boys holding it. Actually, it wasn't Ronnie. I don't think he was out there for that. Maybe he was. I don't remember. Doesn't matter. Freddie, Snit, and some of the boys holding up the trophy. And I treasure that picture. It's dumb. It's a selfie. It's like the only selfie I've ever taken that I'm like, that's cool. I like that one. Brian Snicker is someone who, despite the frustration, despite the hell that I gave him on the air this year, is someone that I owe gratitude to. I think all Braves fans do. Is someone that I think all Braves fans owe our thanks to. 49 years in the organization, decided sticking it out thick and thin, and even when things got difficult this year, was still that guy. Took a load of crap from people like me, and was still that guy. And I think that there is something admirable about that. I think there is something to be celebrated in that. The best I can come up with, the wife and I had a number of weeks ago. We had a bit of an argument, not like a fight, but it was kind of an argument, and it was over a situation that, like happens when any two people who are different people, it was over a difference of opinion in a way a situation should be handled. Nothing big, not the end of the world, but I thought her way of handling it was dumb and bad, and she thought my way of handling it was dumb and bad. And we had a bit of a dust-up over it. And when the dust-up was over, she was pretty upset with me. I was pretty upset with her. And I went, like, I don't know, an hour later, I went to go talk to her, and I'm like, listen, I can't live in a world where you're mad at me and I'm mad at you. And she said, listen, and I don't know why this stuck with me. She said, listen, it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows. It's not always going to be sparkles and glitter. We're going to have times, because we're different people, where we have a disagreement on stuff. And we're going to have times where you're upset with me and I'm upset with you. I love you. We're married. You are the person I want to be with. Just because we're not happy in this moment with each other doesn't mean that I don't love you. I cannot like you, but still love you. And I went, all right, you know what? I get it. I understand that. And I think that was kind of what this year was with Snicker. Love the guy, but we had a hard time reconciling what was happening this season with a team that had high expectations and was an abject failure on the season. We had a tough time this season in a spot where we as fans thought things should be handled one way, and Brian Snicker handled them another way. We had a situation this year where somebody who has been dedicated and loyal and cared about the franchise enough to make a lot of sacrifices to stay in it for a half of a century. Snit was coaching this team, well, coaching in the franchise, 10 years before I was born. That's incredible, man. Like, that's when I say it is unbelievable, I am using that word quite literally. It is unbelievable. How many people in 2025, how many people do you know that are with a company for 49 years? Like, I know that it used to be that way, right? It used to be that Grandpappy worked at the mill for 60 years and then they gave him a gold watch when he retired. I know it used to be that Grandmammy answered the phone down at the hospital for 50 years and then they gave her a very nice diamond brooch when she retired. But that's not how the world works anymore. It's just not. And it's understandable why it doesn't. So for Snit to do that through the year 2025, I think that Braves fans owe him a debt of gratitude. Yes, it was a disappointing year. Yes, we had a difference of opinion. And all of this is predicated, by the way, all of this is predicated by the fact that I do not think that Brian Snicker was ready to step away. My bet is Alex Anthopoulos went to him and gave him the old, hey man, look, we're going to go in a different direction with manager next year, but we will give you the opportunity to go out there and say, Braves fans, thanks for everything. It's my time to step away. Instead of us having to say, hey, this employee has been a model employee. He's been with us 49 years. He has served the organization faithfully and consistently. He's always been one of our guys. And also, he's fired, right? Like, you don't want to fire a cat after 49 years. So I think you say, here's the deal, Snit. We want to give you a career contract. You are an Atlanta Brave for as long as you want to be here. We'll put you in an advisory role. We'll let you come into work every day. You can still be part of baseball operations. You can still go down there on the field. You can still work with the boys. You can be a developmental guy. You can help run the minor league system. Whatever you want to do. But we've got to have a new manager in the dugout next year. And I think that is the right way to handle it. Now, I've got a lot of other concerns about the Braves offseason. We'll get to that as the offseason develops. Playoffs still underway. But despite the hell that I gave Brian Snicker, and I want to be clear, I'm not going to apologize to Brian Snicker for it because I think it was baseball criticism. And I think it was fair baseball criticism. But it was baseball criticism nonetheless. I'm not going to apologize for that. What I am going to say is I appreciate Brian Snicker. I appreciate 49 years that he did everything he could to make the organization from its bottom ranks to the Braves themselves better. I appreciate Brian Snicker for the host of divisional titles that he brought. I appreciate Brian Snicker for the 2021 World Series above all else. I appreciate it for the six NL East titles. I appreciate the 811 wins. I appreciate all of it from Snit. I understand why it was time to move on. It absolutely was time to move on. It doesn't mean I'm not grateful to what Brian Snicker was or what Brian Snicker did for this Atlanta organization. All right, let's take a break. Speaking of criticizing coaches, Chris Fowler went on Instagram yesterday, posted a long video saying that you fans may be going a bit overboard in your criticism of coaches. And I'm not saying that he was necessarily referring to the criticism of one particular coach by one particular fan base that may or may not be a team that we cover extensively here in the upstate of South Carolina. But I am saying I think you'll be interested to hear what he has to say. We'll get to that. Lane Kiffin said dynasties are dead in college football moving forward. Does he have a point? The Big Ten is looking at allowing a private equity firm to become a $20 billion plus dollar investor in the conference. The businessification of college football at its highest levels is well underway. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is the Fan Up State.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are going to be talking about this at length today because while it may feel like a very boring story to many of you, I assure you, for all the times that I have said, this may be a landscape-shifting story. I know many of you have thought many of those times that I was being perhaps facetious, exaggerative, or
no,
trying to be a shock jock.
Come on.
I assure you, as somebody who has not only made it my goal in broadcasting not to do that or be those things, I assure you that I really don't try to be. This one, I am not going to say this may not be or this may be a landscape shifting story. This time I'm going to tell you this is a landscape shifting story. Don't try to say those words next to each other. You may screw them up on the radio. This will be a landscape shifting story. According to Pete Thamel and Dan Wetzel. And if Pito and Dano get together on a story, the story's got implications. According to Pete Thamel and Dan Wetzel, the Big Ten is in discussions about a private capital deal that would infuse at least $2 billion into the league and into its member institutions. Here's what we know about the deal as of now. The discussion includes a 10-year extension of the league's grant of rights until 2046. The GOR for the Big Ten currently runs up in 2036. That is when they would renew their grant of rights for whatever comes next. Obviously, that would be predicated on TV deals, etc., how they're doing in the playoffs and extra money coming in and yada, yada, yada. This would extend it 10 more years past where it is at now. So it would take the grant of rights to 2046. The reason for that would be this $2 billion would go into a pot that would be spread out across all of the schools. It is a massive and immediate influx of cash that would be given to the schools. And in return for that massive and immediate influx of cash, the schools would say, we will all sign on to allow the conference to own our broadcast rights through 2046. So it's basically, give us a bunch of money now, and we'll let you be in charge of the television broadcast rights for another decade after the deadline, which is now still 11 years away. Right now, according to Thamel and Wetzel, there is support amongst the Big Ten member institutions, a majority opinion, but the Big Ten would like to have league-wide consensus before they approve this deal. The two report that there are a few of the league's bigger brands, including Ohio State and Michigan, who are, at least in some way, apprehensive about the deal, which makes sense. Ohio State and Michigan already make a buttload of money, more than every other member institution in the Big Ten. So if a huge influx of cash was to come in, it's kind of like I have said before when I talk about billionaire owners. I do not feel bad when billionaire owners say, well, this thing that I would have to do instead of taking a tax break would cost the billionaire owner X millions of dollars. Yeah, that's a drop in the bucket when you have that much money. What these schools are looking at is saying all of the money we would get out of this $2 billion investment into the conference, yes, it would help us, but it would take all these other schools and it would give them a foundation of money to invest and to grow off of that would take them closer to us than it would put us further above them. They would make more progress from where they are to where we are than we would make from where we are to staying the same distance ahead of them in the financial department. So the Big Ten will likely have to make some sort of compromise with Ohio State, Michigan. I would guess Penn State's probably in that mix. Maybe USC is in that mix with the amount of money that they get in from boosters and alum. I don't know.
Oregon
with Phil Knight probably in that mix. We'll see. Maybe not. Maybe there's some that do think it is a good thing. And I am sure that, I am not sure. I would suspect with zero evidence that there is probably one or two of those schools that look and they go, the SEC has put some ground between us and them financially. This would help us make up that ground immediately with the Southeastern Conference. And for the record, I do think that, A, that is true. A huge influx of cash now would give the Big Ten an opportunity to get on better footing, to have a quicker pace to catch the SEC than the SEC has distancing itself from the Big Ten. So here is, from what I read in this article from Thamel and Wetzel, some of you may have seen it already, but here is how I have read it is set up. It is essentially the formation of a commercial entity within the Big Ten. And this new commercial entity within the Big Ten would house all revenue generation, media rights, sponsorships, league revenue streams of any type. They would all flow into this commercial entity that is inside of the Big Ten. That commercial entity would effectively be divided into 20 shares. So much like a large business, right? Where you can buy stock and that stock says you have X percent. For most of us that are small fry investors, you might own like 0.00001% of the company. But when the company turns a profit, you get 0.00001% of that in the value of your stock increasing. This would, instead of having hundreds of thousands or millions of shares, this would have 20. Each school, each member institution would own one equity share. The conference would own one equity share. That is how the conference would make their money off of this. And the private entity, the private investor that they would get in bed with for this would own one share. That's how their ROI would come in. They're looking at this effectively and saying that we believe that if we put a $2 billion investment into the Big Ten in return for one share of what this new media enter, this new rights entity is going to be inside of the conference, that over the time between here and 2046, we would get more than $2 billion back in return for that one share. By giving $2 billion to create this thing, we believe our one share of this thing will have a value of over $2 billion between here and 2046. Now, here's where I kind of start to become a cynic. Here's where I start to become a little bit jaded. The concept, I understand. The concept, I get. It's just like any other business. And as somebody who accepted a very long time ago that there are too many suit and tie billion and millionaires in charge of this to ever not have college football be a business again. There's just too much money involved and too many people invested that will ever say, you know what, this isn't fun. Let's go back to the way college football used to be. It's not going to happen. So as somebody who accepted that years ago, while many of you are still getting punched in the face with that realization, the concept of it makes sense. Here's where the cynicism comes in. They write in their article that a league source told the two authors of this, Thamel and Wetzel, quote, think of it this way. The conference is not selling a piece of the conference. Traditional conference functions would remain 100% with the conference office, scheduling, officiating, and championships. The new entity being created would focus on business development, and it would include an outside investor with a small financial stake. There was another source that gave them a quote. Quote, we're underselling the strength of what we do the way we are structured. This is a way to organize ourselves better. There was another quote in there, and I'm working to find the exact quote, but basically they said, think about it this way. This is a way that the Big Ten could act in uniform. This is a way that, for instance, this conference could, they use the example of jersey patches. Here it is. Nebraska Athletic Director Troy Dannon quoted in an AP article last week when the concept of teams wearing corporate logos on the jersey, which we discussed earlier this week. Quote, if you jump in now and I'm going to get a little bit of money because of the jersey patches, I would really like to see if there's an opportunity for our conference to put all those jersey patch rights together and all of a sudden they're worth a whole lot more to the institutions when 18 are playing instead of one. So basically what they're saying is in this capacity, the conference would have the ability to go sell jersey patch rights. And this is just one of a million revenue streams that may be dictated by this. The conference would own the right to sell the jersey patch rights, meaning that instead of every school getting $1 million, I'm making up numbers here, most would get more than that, but $1 million for Ohio State to put, the Skyline Chili logo on their jersey.
No, that would be the Kroger.
I'm sorry, you have to claim, it's Cincinnati, you have to claim it as a state.
No.
That's
no.
On you.
Yeah, but Columbus, it would be Kroger, trust me.
Whoever it is.
Or Wendy's is
that's fair. All right. Yeah. So Ohio State would get $1 million for the Wendy's logo. And then Michigan would get $1 million for the Michigan company logo. And Penn State would get $1 million.
Probably has to do with porta potties or something.
Who knows?
Like yeah.
Penn State would get $1 million for the Penn State company, the Pennsylvania company logo. Whatever. Instead of that.
Hey, where's that money go?
Well, in those patches as it stands. Goes to the athletic department, goes to the school.
So does it make its way to the players?
With the Big Ten, nope, that goes to the aid. Now it can be part of their rev share. If they want to put it all towards their $20 million rev share, they can. It's up to them. It just goes into the AD department budget. So what this is saying is now the Big Ten via this entity could sell the jersey patches conference-wide. And their belief is instead of 18 schools getting $1 million, or Ohio State getting $10 million and Maryland getting $1 million, they could sell those patches for the entire conference and get $1 billion and everybody gets more collectively, which is why somebody like Ohio State would be hesitant and somebody like Maryland would be like, full throttle, let's go all in. So, with all of that being said, I am jaded and cynical about this. And it's not because this is the in bleepification of college football, as I saw a number of message boarders refer to it as yesterday. There's a different reason that I am jaded, that I am cynical, that I am a skeptic, that this is a good thing, even as somebody who knows that this is the inevitable outcome of businessifying college football. And I'll tell you what is driving my cynicism and my skepticism when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So the Big Ten is considering allowing a private entity, unnamed at this point. My assumption is they're likely going to have bidders for this because there will be a number of, I assume, with context, I assume, private equity firms that would be willing to do this. Kind of a hedge fund situation. This would be a large, obviously, multi-billion dollar company whose only job is to take money from investors, invest it to grow that company's investments, to then return some of the profits made by investing back to the investors. Private equity is likely where this $2 billion is coming from. So why then am I cynical, skeptical, whatever word you would like to use here? The answer is, because I pay attention to what is happening in the real world. And the answer is because private equity firms are not a group that is going to invest money into something and then is going to sit back and not be involved with what happens here. People who run these types of firms are not the type of people who go, "Here you go, Big Ten. Here's a $2 billion check. Go run this thing and make us money." They are the type of people who are going to be involved. They just are. You don't see private equity firms that get involved and then sit on their hands when they have billions of dollars invested in a company. They are going to want to have a say. And the reality is, as I've said, I've accepted that college football is a billion-dollar business that is never again, it's never again going to operate with the interest of you and me and the everyday Joe Blow college football fans in mind. College football from this point forward will only operate with the interest of the suits and ties who make seven and eight figures off of college football in mind. I accepted that a very long time ago. I have been encouraging all of you to do the same, not because I think it is a good thing. In fact, quite the opposite. I do not. The reason why is because it's never going to change. Like, the only way that it would change is if we, as American sports fans, stopped watching college football. And every day, I jump on Reddit or whatever message board I'm looking at, and every day, I did it this morning. I was reading through some of the comments in response to this story. And the first one that was on the Reddit stream was a guy who said, "You know, I'm glad that this is happening now." And I'm paraphrasing it, but it's pretty close. "I'm glad that this is happening now that I'm a little bit older and I'm more comfortable with focusing on hobbies that are not impacted by other people, like focusing on my own stuff." He's like photography, woodworking, stuff that other people don't have any input on. "Because all of the things that I've always loved, but depend on other people to run it, organize it, etc., they all progressively get worse over time." And then it was just like a stream of people that started chiming in and going, "Oh, I can't wait to get to that point," or "I'm in the same boat," or, "You know, I keep saying I'm not going to watch anymore, but then Saturday comes and it's like, well, I guess I'm watching football." I have a friend of mine. I told you this story a couple of weeks ago, back week one, Cincinnati, Nebraska. Buddy of mine is a Nebraska fan, And we were having the conversation about that game that got played at Arrowhead. Nebraska came into that game at, I think, like -2.5. And I was like, I believe in Matt Rhule. I'm drinking the Rhule-Aid. I think Nebraska can win this game. Ultimately, they did not cover, and it was not what they wanted it to be. They won the game, but, you know, it was way closer, and there were multiple spots in it that it looked like Nebraska was going to find a way to give that game away. And my dear friend, who is a Nebraska guy, said, you know, at some point, I'm going to stop watching a game that is being played by a bunch of teenage millionaires and a bunch of head coaches that don't care about anything more than making their money and letting it ruin my Saturdays. And I said, I love you, buddy, but no, you won't. No, you won't. And sure as shooting, the very next Saturday, during the Nebraska game, he starts texting me, you watching Dylan Raiola? I think Matt Rhule might be the guy. Maybe I spoke to him. Right back to it. It's the exact same thing that happened when so many of y'all.
This guy doesn't bet, does he?
He does, but he wasn't betting. He's like me. He doesn't bet on his own team. This was strictly about the performance of the football team.
Because that's not a very accurate thing. Matt Rhule is probably not the guy.
I mean, we'll find out. But the point is, he was out till the next game kicked off that he was in. It was the same people who said, oh, this Colin Kaepernick guy, I'm out on the NFL. And then the NFL, every year since, has turned in increased ratings year after year. It is the same with the NBA.
I think I'm so. Out. I think some of the people who say that they're leaving, they actually do. But there's an influx of new fans that make up for some of those people leaving.
Okay, then let's put it this way then. If not enough of you are stopping the watch, that new fans are making up your numbers and growing it, then it doesn't matter either. Doesn't matter either. The value goes up. So unless we, as a country in our entirety, walk away from college football, none of this is going to stop. And with a private equity firm involved, there is zero chance, in my opinion, that they are going to say, here's $2 billion. Good luck, guys.
How does this hurt the classic fan? Is it just the patches?
If you don't see,
how are you going to know?
It is everything that can make the conference money. Anything that can make the, not the schools individually, but a lot of that, because the grants of rights, there, it is more than just the broadcast rights. There is a lot of what you are allowed to advertise, how, when, and why, that goes to the conference of the schools.
Let me phrase it differently. How does this affect the play on the field?
I don't know that it does. I do know that.
So in the end, that's what we're watching for. I mean, advertising is important, all that kind of stuff, and it will influence you whether you think it will or not. If you see something enough, you may, when you're thinking, oh, I need a hamburger. Oh, I've seen like 10,000 McDonald's commercials. I think I'll go to McDonald's. It does work. But in the end, it's about the play on the field. If it's not affecting the play on the field, then I don't know why it matters that much to people. I don't know why it would stop them from watching the product.
There is a sentimentality amongst college football fans. And I will say that this is one of two things is going to happen. Either collectively, the audience of college football, which we have seen growing every year, will plateau because of the businessification of college football and will start to decline because what I think a lot of, and I will say this in a paint with a broad brush way, I think a lot of this sentimentality of college football is from older fans. It's from fans who grit like, and when I say older, I'm including myself in that.
I just think unless you look like a NASCAR driver with patches all over your uniform, most people are not going to notice.
I don't know. What I do know is you have heard, I have heard, we have heard the complaints from people who go, it's getting too businessified. I'm not saying it impacts anything, but when, for instance, when South Carolina took the Palmetto Tree logo off the field and put down a big yellow caterpillar sign, which fine, they made a ton of money doing that. We heard a lot of people who said, I hate this. That Palmetto Tree on the field was a unique stamp of ours. That was our thing. That was, if you tuned into a game and you saw that, it had that old school college football vibe to it. And now that's gone. Now it's like I tune in, bang, there's another logo in my face. We have heard the conversation ongoing about adding more logos to fields for that. Now we got the jersey patches. I'm not saying it's going to impact everybody. You may not care at all. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that go, hey, as long as they're playing college football and it's good college football, I'm all in.
I can give you another example. You and I have had a discussion and you were pretty upset when the Prime logo got put in a wrestling ring.
Yes.
If you watched WrestlePalooza, there were logos all over the
ring. Yes, there were.
And it was just, it looked like an MMA fight. It looked like a boxing fight. It looked like a normal sport in the fight game.
Yes, it did. And I can tell you that. And again, maybe I'm the outlier here. But since TKO took over, and it is very clearly, and they said it out loud. So this isn't like, oh, here comes Liberob the Woke Warrior. They said it out loud. They do not care about classic wrestling or the family first that wrestling has traditionally, but they don't care about it. They have said out loud, we only care about driving the profit up. And I can tell you that, and I think you've probably experienced this during the last handful of fight clubs today at 9:20. I've never forgotten about it in my life. I have not watched nearly as much main event roster WWE. I'm not going to say I'm totally checked out, but I am not watching it nearly as much as I am. I'm more ingesting it now in like clips of the important things that happen, not the show. A lot more NXT. And beginning to trickle back over to predominantly AEW because of it. That is kind of the vibe that a lot of college football fans have about college football. And when the primary motivator of college football becomes about making money and it's a distant second place to anything else, and when I say it, I'm not just talking about like a school or a conference. I'm talking about the entire structure of it. Much like is happening in WWE. When it gets to the point that it is the only goal, you can make money. I'll give you the example. Me. The goal of mine in doing this job is make money. Now in the short term to pay the bills. Hopefully one day in the long term to have retirement money for, like, you know, own a yacht and an island money. Not that kind of island. Don't get weird. The goal long term for me is to make a bunch of money doing this. However, when we play the intro song at 6 a.m., my goal right this very second is not money. My goal is to put on a good show and entertain people and have people get invested and involved and want to be a bigger part of this. However, one of the reasons, in my ever so humble yet frequently correct opinion, that across all of sports radio, you are starting to hear uniformity across all radio stations. You're just getting the same voices and the same guys doing the same style radio. Why? Because at the end of the day, at the corporate level, the only goal is all the time and nothing else, never anything else, is to make money. And they're going to do whatever is the best at that thing. So at some point, I do think that if you have private equity money involved in college football, and maybe I'll be wrong about this, but historically speaking, when an investment firm has billions of dollars in the line, it makes the entity that they have invested in be concerned with only nothing else, making money to be able to give that investment firm back their cash. That's it. That's all they're invested in. And so when we have had these little things here and there, all right, we've got South Carolina taking up the Palmetto logo and putting down a business and walk into Death Valley. Friggin' advertisements on every available brick in the building, right? When all of that is happening, that's all stuff that I can overlook because I can look down at the football field and I can go, okay, well, at least we're playing football. I'm not convinced. Here, I'll give you the example. The NFL has over the years done 100 things that impact play on the field. For what purpose? To make sure that their games start at an exact minute and end at an exact minute so that they can get the next game on so that they do not have to lose money on their TV rights deals. That is why NFL games will not change dramatically, because the goal is we have to have this game off so we can roll into the next one in our early and mid windows without missing a beat, because it will cost us money. It is that attitude that impacts the game. Is it drastic? No, but I would also say And this is what I do think happens to college football long term. It's because that's been happening so long that we all know there's no shine anymore. Like, we're like, okay, that's what it is, and we accept it, and we're still going to watch the ball. And I do think that happens to college football long term. But here it is. Kane just showing up. And you know, Kane and I butted heads on just about everything. But Kane just said exactly what I think my point is long term. When the advertisement supersedes the product, I lose interest. The product must be good. At what point does, if this happens, the Big Ten say the product, the quality of the product isn't important. The return on investment is. Because that private equity firm is not just going to sit back and be like, go on, go nuts, Big Ten, do your thing. They are going to have a voice. And that voice, with $2 billion behind it, is going to have power behind it to change things more to the business side than the football side. That's my thought on that. All right, we're going to come back to this later on because there's plenty more to pick apart. We got some comments from Lane Kiffin I want to address. We got Major League Baseball playoffs. Three series going to a game three today. The Dodgers have moved on. We'll break down what happened yesterday. All that and more after Lonzo tells you what I just told you in this Sports Flash.
I got you to stop, though.
I forgot about that.
That's all right. The Cleveland Guardians tied their three-game series with Detroit with a 6-1 victory. Tanner Bibee went 4.2 innings with five hits and one run allowed, while Cleveland recorded six hits, including a George Valera homer in the first inning that set the tone. The elimination game is today at 3. San Diego forced an elimination game today with a 3-0 win over the Cubs. Dylan Cease gave up no runs in a short 3.2 inning start, but Mason Miller, who struck out five of the six innings pitched, included a punch-out with a 104.5-mile-per-hour fastball, the fastest recorded pitch in postseason history. Game 3 is at 5. The Yankees defeated the Red Sox 4-3 to force a Game 3 in their series. Carlos Rodon pitched six solid innings with four hits and three runs allowed, while the Yankee offense punched up 10 hits, including a Ben Rice homer and an Austin Wells sac fly to score the winning run.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.